I'm Afshin Rattansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. It's been a week since President Vladimir Putin was re-elected by the Russian people in a landslide victory, but that hasn't stopped US President Biden and his Washington proxy nations in NATO continuing to arm a Zelensky in Kiev who has outlawed elections in Ukraine. Not only that, but Zelensky has made peace talks illegal. And then, last week, after nuclear warnings from Putin, Russia claimed that surveillance had revealed President Macron plans to deploy 2,000 French soldiers to kill Russians, in addition to innumerable UK troops already in Ukraine, revealed in an intercepted German military phone call. They probably don't remember that it was 41 years ago this month that US President Ronald Reagan, who successfully helped to destroy the USSR, proposed his never-implemented Star Wars space-based missile system. Someone who will is Reagan's Assistant Secretary of Defense, who in post administered about 70% of the US defense budget. Dr. Larry Korb is now a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, and he joins me now from Washington, D.C. Thank you so much, Dr. Korb, for coming on. So, Putin congratulated 87% of the vote, congratulated by China, India, the whole of the global south, the international community. I mean, given the US think tanks even concede that Putin is clearly popular in Russia, in your experience during the Reagan administration, could you ever imagine that there'd be no communication seemingly between Blinken and his counterpart, between Biden and Putin, because that's what they're saying right now?
No, particularly toward the end of the Reagan administration, or I should say in his second term, he was visiting with the Russians. We had contact with the Russians on a lot of areas, and particularly when Reagan developed what we call Star Wars, or the Strategic Defense Initiative, a lot of us knew that it was, you know, it was very, very difficult strategically for that to happen, or conceptually, but the Russians believed it. The Russians believed that if we were to do that and spend this type of money, that there must be something something to it, even though most experts, you know, felt it was it was practically impossible.
Clearly how you won the Cold War, you and your team there in D.C. But how dangerous is it that the telephone, the red telephone, isn't being used, given we have explicit from the Kremlin, at least the context of nuclear weapons being invoked. And, I mean, nuclear weapons clearly being invoked in this region in the Middle East by Israeli cabinet ministers. But why do you think there hasn't been any high-level contact, given it's so obvious that even conventional hypersonic missile use, let alone nuclear use, is now a possibility in Western Europe?
Well, you've got two reasons. One, Trump got out of some of the arrangements that we had made with the Russians. And then, of course, once this war started, the Russians cut off all of these talks because we were aiding Ukraine. I think that that really...
No, I don't think it was Russia cutting off the talks. They've been pretty explicit. So is Sergei Lavrov at the foreign ministry in Russia. It's the Americans that are refusing to talk.
Well, but basically, when the Russians invaded Ukraine, they basically, we felt we could not continue dealing with them on other issues because this was so important. And the Russians didn't object, you know, to, you know, the cutting off the talks. In fact, if you look at the speech that Putin gave on February, the end of February there about nuclear weapons, he talked all about possibly using tactical nuclear
weapons.
But
isn't it obvious? Isn't it obvious? I mean, with your perspective over many decades, it was clearly mentioned the other day on Going Underground, actually, a member of the foreign policy firmament in Moscow saying there's a lot of surprise in Russia with the way the United States is sending in billions of dollars of weapons, knowing that Russia has nuclear weapons. This is a kind of different stage in the evolution of mutually assured destruction.
Well, I think that our dealings with Russia all during the Cold War, we could basically For example, in the Korean War, they were backing North Korea. We were obviously backing South Korea. In Vietnam, they were backing the North Vietnamese, and we backing the South Vietnamese. But we still were able to deal with nuclear weapons separately.
And there was communication between Moscow and D.C.
And basically, if you look at the Cuban Missile Crisis, you know, once that happened, then we, you know, we really, you know, went full speed ahead with the talks, recognizing how close we came to a nuclear war. That was my first year in the Navy, and we all thought it was over. You know, we just thought that that was going to be it. But the fact of the matter is we were able to avoid that. And I'm confident that at some point, if we can resolve this horrible situation in Ukraine satisfactorily, we'll get back to the talks, because remember, New START doesn't expire until 2025. So we have a couple of years to do it.
I know you're mentioning START negotiations, and they're very important, but you know, I am British, and there exists this Western European part of the world. That could be the battlefield. Of course, the United States is safe. Of course, Russia is safe. The war of attrition continues. Russia is fine with that. As it maybe approaches Odessa. But if there are French soldiers there, I mean, there are British soldiers there already, according to that phone call, surely there is the possibility then of nuclear strikes in Western Europe in this limited field. You mentioned tactical nuclear weapons that were raised by Vladimir Putin.
Well, we have troops in Europe as well. I mean, you know, we've got tens of thousands of troops in Germany.
Yeah, but the United States isn't going to use a nuclear weapon in a conflict against Russia when that conflict is going on in Western Europe, is it? Because the United States would be destroyed.
Well, again, you've got strategic and you've got tactical nuclear weapons. We have nuclear weapons in Europe that we could use if we had to. But I think the real key here...
Sorry to stop you there, but just explain that. You have nuclear weapons at Ramstein Air Base in Germany. Why on earth, over Ukraine, would the United States risk the mass killing of every American over Ukraine?
Well, basically, there's always a risk. But I think we need to convey to the Russians that even if they use so-called tactical nuclear weapons in Europe, there's going to be a response, and we would be willing to take the risk you talk about, because if they do that, then we'll respond overwhelmingly.
And you think the American people support that?
Yeah, basically, we don't talk about nuclear weapons anymore. I mean, what happened all during the Cold War, that was always front and center, the negotiation, kids getting under their desks in school and everything like that. We just don't think about it much anymore. And I think if you said to people, in the next election, are you for or against New START? I don't think people would really focus on it. And that's rather unfortunate, because we thought with the Strategic Defense Initiative and the collapse of the Soviet Union, we have put that era behind us. But another development here that's important is China is developing nuclear weapons. So if you're going to go back to arms control negotiations...
Yeah, I'm not so much talking about arms control here. I'm talking about the imminent use of weapons of mass destruction on this scale because of Joe Biden's policy in Kiev in supporting Zelensky, who has made illegal the idea of peace negotiations as a law in Kiev.
Well, basically, I think you got two things. One is the public in terms of what Zelensky is saying. The other is private. And you got Bill Burns, who's the director of the CIA, used to be ambassador to Russia. And I'm sure he's keeping the dialogue open. We wouldn't say it. But on the other hand, I think it's important to keep in mind that we still have deterrence. The Russians have got to know if they use them, we're going to respond.
Yeah, but that's not true. I mean, I can see why Trump is riding high in the opinion polls, because clearly the American people, I mean, it must be your hunch that the American people would not want them all to die. All hundreds of millions of Americans want to die to support Vladimir Zelensky in Kiev. I mean, that is not what Americans want. That's maybe why they're supporting Trump against Biden.
Well, basically, the majority of people support what we're doing in Ukraine and support the fight against the Russians. Not everybody. We've always had diversity in our country going back, you know, go back and look at the 1952 election between Eisenhower and Taft. And you go back and you take a look, we have had these things. So that is not anything that's new. We very rarely get 100% of people who agree on everything because we're such a diverse country. But I think the majority are in favor of letting Putin know that if you should be foolish enough to use nuclear weapons, we will respond.
Well, then why does Joe Biden have to be so clear that no one U.S. soldier will be fighting for Zelensky on the ground in Ukraine, as he keeps reiterating?
Well, basically, I think he's saying that because of the fact we don't need that if we can provide the aid. I mean, the Russians thought they were going to win that war in a week. I was in Moscow in December of 2021, and I couldn't believe what the Russians, they were getting ready to invade. And one of the points I made to them, we had used to have this NATO-Russia dialogue that dealt with nuclear weapons, and I had lots of contacts in Russia. I thought they would have an insurgency even if they went in. I didn't realize they would get so much Western support right away. And I think that dumbfounded the Russians that we were able to get not just the United States, but most of NATO. We've expanded NATO. I mean, that's already been a loss for the Russians.
But so what? I mean, Russia has more nuclear weapons than any other country in the world. The expansion of NATO doesn't alter the fact that all of those countries can be wiped out in a matter of 30 minutes. And isn't the surprise here, there are probably some dumbfounded Russians at how strong the Russian economy has become and how the alliances and deals with the global south, its support, I mean, Russia has been supported economically, clearly by China, India, the entire global south, against these NATO countries that you mentioned, the minority of the world.
Well, of course they are. But the fact of the matter is, deterrence still exists. The United States has embarked on a modernization of all three legs of its nuclear triad. And basically, it's going to be much more capable over the next decade than it is right now in terms of being able to use nuclear weapons if, heaven forbid, it should come to that. So we're not, Putin can talk a lot, but our nuclear arsenal is going to be much better than his because he doesn't have the money to do what he needs to do given the Russian economy.
Dr. Larry Korb, I'll stop you there. More from the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress and former U.S. Assistant Defense Secretary, Dr. Larry Korb. Dr. Korb, we were talking about the advance in nuclear technology in the United States prepared over the next decade. Arguably that, you know, it's going to have to be sooner than that if you hear voices even in the policy think tanks of Moscow. Do you think in this election year, Joe Biden, he's clearly willing to pursue the $60 billion which Congress has been holding up to pour into Zelensky's accounts. He's clearly continuing in the South China Sea with China. He's supporting the bombing of Syria and Iraq because of the Gaza genocide. He's bombing Yemen as we speak. He's continuing what's happening in Haiti after President Obama overthrew the government there. And he's fighting underground, who knows, in West Africa with Mali and Burkina Faso. How many wars is he going to create in an election year? What is this defense posture? And can you understand why Trump at every rally talks about peace rather than war as the future?
Well, I certainly can't understand. What Biden is doing, first of all, the priority he's giving in the money he spends in our defense budget, which is close to $1 trillion.
You've now opposed it in the past. I should just interrupt there. The amounts.
The amount we spend annually on the on national security is about $1 trillion now, the direction we're going. And basically, the main thing of the normal or the defense budget basically is to deal with China. These other things that you talked about that we're spending on, that comes over and above the regular budget. The $60 billion will not come out of the normal defense budget, nor will the $14 billion that's targeted for Israel. We have forces deployed in the Middle East. We've had them in Europe. And the whole situation in Haiti, we just sent the Marines back there to protect people in the embassy. Our problem is going to be dealing with the Haitian refugees that are going to try and come by boat to the United States, and some of the southern governors are not happy about that. But by and large, if you take a look at the percentage of the gross domestic product, or GDP, that goes to defense, it's about 3%. During the Cold War, it was 6%. And as a result of what Putin has done, the Europeans have finally met the 2% of GDP that Trump used to say was a reason for us to stop supporting NATO because they weren't meeting it. Well, they're meeting it now.
Okay. So you mentioned there a war with China or preparing for something with China. I mean, the 40 million Americans cannot eat tonight without federal aid as part of your SNAP food stamp program. Do you think ordinary Americans want to prepare for a war with China, which China always denies? It has no intention of having a war with the United States. Isn't the game up on all of this? I mean, I'm speaking to you from the Middle East, where clearly the rules-based order, so beloved as a phrase by Jake Sullivan, National Security Advisor, and Antony Blinken at the Secretary of State, it's out the window because the United States has been backing genocide in the Middle East. No one trusts the United States has anything to do with rules-based order, UN resolutions, or anything else. Do you think all of this is mounting towards the idea of some sort of idea of retrenchment and caring about ordinary Americans rather than this war preparedness for countries that never said that they wanted war ever before with the United States?
Now, again, if you take a look and you compare it now to the Cold War in terms of what we spend on defense, the percentage of GDP or gross domestic product is less. The proposed defense budget for fiscal year 2025, which starts this coming September, is not even a real increase. It's a 1% increase, which is not enough to keep pace with inflation, because that's a deal that Biden made with former Speaker McCarthy, basically right before he got voted out of office. So it's not a question that they say during the Cold War, when we were spending more than half of our entire federal budget and a much larger percentage of GDP on defense. There are many people in the United States, we've always had them, who don't think we ought to be involved in a lot of foreign conflicts, but they're not a majority. And if you take a look, for example, the war I was in Vietnam, people supported that until they realized we had no strategy for winning. And
just like Afghanistan, more recently, I mean, one doesn't even need to go that far back for that. So you're just saying that as regards the holdup that there has been for the $60 billion to Zelensky, which has caused panic in Western Europe, that was more to do with Trump politics rather than a belief in Congress and the wider American public that you've lost this war. This whole Ukraine proxy war off the dead bodies of hundreds of thousands, perhaps a million dead Ukrainians, has been just another disaster after Libya, Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, and I don't know whether I've remembered them all.
Well, again, you've got to go back and say, despite all of our mistakes, and we certainly have made them like any other country, we won the Cold War, we prevailed. Now, the Russians obviously have changed ever since Reagan and Gorbachev. Remember, they were going to get rid of all nuclear weapons. We wouldn't support that. And all of the things you talked about, Americans, we don't have a draft anymore. So Americans are not forced to serve if they don't want. And I think Biden's policies have been very prudent. to keep things from getting out of hand.
Wait, prudence, you mean regarding the accounts? And of course, Biden now avowedly, unlike during those times, saying it's about military Keynesianism. It's not even so much about Ukraine. Actually, Ukraine is just by the by. It's about jobs in the United States, the defense spending. We had Chuck Spinney, the infamous Pentagon whistleblower, on this program. People can watch it on Rumble about the waste of money that you've written about yourself. So this is actually about jobs in the United States, and Biden has been prudent. But what about Western Europe? I keep coming back to this. Western Europe faces incredible instability. It's an economic crisis. Germany is in recession. We know about the Nord Stream pipeline, just to mention one U.S. atrocity, according to Seymour Hersh, the great journalist who exposed my lie. What about Western Europe? Russia and the United States might be fine. The United States might be under the Biden military Keynesianism, great from all these military arms-making jobs. But what about Western Europe?
I think Western Europe is doing much better now than they did before the Russians invaded in terms of their cohesion with each other. After all, you have the French and the United Kingdom sending troops in there. They're increasing their defense.
Sorry, Dr.
spending.
Corbett, I got to interrupt there because I have some of the, you know, I mean, Olaf Scholz in Germany, 73% won him sacked. Macron, 71%. These are the latest opinion polls. Won him out of office. Johannes Stor of Norway won him out, 71%. Sunak of Britain, 66% won him out. Rutte of Holland, 65% won him out. Austria, Nehammer, 63% won him out. Varadkar in Ireland, I think he's gone already. Ulf Kristersson, Sweden, 55% want him. They're all unpopular. Their countries are in economic turmoil. The numbers of poverty, the inequality rising as they've self-sanctioned themselves outside the world economy, which is, as we can look at the Russian statistics, improving beyond any Russian expectation, perhaps. As the rest of the world improves, Western Europe is in crisis. And it's giving rise to social movements, clearly, that oppose Washington policy and do not want a penny more for Zelensky.
Well, basically, I would disagree with you. I think, yes, you
No, I'm
have
talking about the
opposition.
People of Europe. It's not me.
I'm going to talk about the people in Europe. They obviously are unhappy with their government over a lot of things. But you got to remember, you got to go back to COVID. The impact that COVID had on the global economy was horrible. And basically,
didn't it affect Russia too? Why is Russia doing so well?
Russia is not doing so well, okay, in terms of basically what they're able to do in terms of provide education for their people to invest in.
You've seen the financial press. I mean, even The Economist, the usual reverse barometer, usually, I think, every publication in the world recognizes the Russian economy has done well out of this war. They're saying it's military Keynesianism on the Russian side that the Russian economy is doing so well, the war economy. But of course, the Russian government says it's because more generally the alliances they made through BRICS and the alliances of this new world order with China.
Well, I would disagree with you. They're doing well in the sense of the spending on the military, and you're doing that, but they're having to get, you know, criminals to go fight this war in Ukraine. They're not getting the Russian people. If the Russian people were so satisfied, they'd be volunteering to deal with what Putin says is, an existential...
I'm not sure what basis we have other than U.S. propaganda outlets for that. They're having to get criminals to fight the war. And isn't the war... I mean, you were in the Pentagon. Can you not see this as a war of attrition? They've taken that side of Ukraine. All they have to do is wait it out. And if what you're saying is right about the Russian economy, why was Putin elected in this landslide? You must admit Putin is more popular in Russia than any European leader is in Western Europe, let alone Joe Biden in the United States.
I would disagree with that. If Putin was so confident, why did he have Navalny killed? Okay. And if you take a look at the voting, people came out.
Navalny only had 5% of the vote in any Western polling of Russia. He didn't need him killed, did he? If he as Western media claims he did have him killed, he was not going to win the election. And just on that particular point you make there, are you saying that Joe Biden is more popular in the United States right now than Vladimir Putin is in Russia?
I would say yes. If you got to the real, what people
what basis,
really express
what basis?
Their
I mean, look
opinions.
At Statista, which uses the German-based polling firm. Look at every polling firm. I'm talking about Western polling. I'm not talking about Russian Kremlin propaganda ones. You think Biden is more popular in the United States than Putin is in Russia?
Realistically, sure. But basically, if Putin was so popular, why did he not just let Navalny run against him and let him in a
Well, Putin denies any
election.
Involvement in Navalny, who I
well,
must say
yeah,
is hated.
He,
I have to just say, I'm speaking
why
to you from a Muslim country. We have anyone can look on online to see Navalny saying the extermination of Muslims was his agenda. So we have to be careful about talking about Navalny, an extreme right-wing nationalist who supported the occupation of Crimea that I thought you oppose. Let me get on to Trump. What happens in a Trump presidency? He's the front runner to win in November. What do you expect Trump to do? He said reputedly to Viktor Orban of Hungary in Mar-a-Lago the other day that he'd end all funding for the proxy war through Ukraine.
Well, again, I think he will try, but he will also try and get out of NATO. But the Congress has passed a law saying he can't get out of NATO without their permission. And basically, if you take a look, Trump will talk a good game, okay, but it's going to be very hard for him to do things. Is it
He's a democratically elected president. Surely he's allowed to do things if he's running America, the United States.
Well, but the great thing about our system is we have checks and balances, as basically Biden is finding out now with the war to Ukraine and Israel. But if you take a look at what Trump did when he was in office and he went to North Korea and basically tried to get them to get rid of their nuclear weapons and talked about it, he increased defense spending dramatically during his time in office. We reversed kind of the post-Cold War downturn when he came in. So, again, it's hard to tell what Trump is going to do because he talks more than, you know, he does in many cases. I don't think it would be good for the United States or the world for him to come in terms of things that we're trying to do. It'll be interesting to see what he does in the Middle East. We're trying to stop the civilian casualties in our discussions with Netanyahu, but Trump doesn't seem to be concerned about those things. Don't forget he got out of the nuclear deal with Iran and started them, you know, provoked them into doing things. So, you know, this whole idea of Trump comes in and things are going to change dramatically in foreign policy. No, I don't think so.
Dr. Larry Korb, thank you.
Okay, thanks for having me.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to the survivors of US, UK, EU nation armed killing in Gaza. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country. And head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.